By the late 1950s, concrete pavement construction was experiencing a severe downturn. Aaron Liesk explains why this was so.
The growth in traffic, and consequently the use of fuel oil, had grown considerably. Bitumen was relatively cheap because there was an abundance of it. Concrete sort of fell out of favour because they had a large asphalt plant at our central workshop at Granville. Not only that, but dissatisfaction with the riding qualities. The riding qualities of the asphalt were far superior.
What saved concrete pavements was the decision by the DMR to embark on its most ambitious road construction project, the 2.4 kilometres of the Warringah Expressway. Arvo Tinney was the resident engineer on that project. But before that, he started his career with the DMR in 1960 as a works engineer at the Ballina Works Office.
The works engineer had to set out all the roads, and I had a theodolite and I had a level. Except my theodolite was I think it was Cook Thornton Sims from about 1850 vintage, four-screw instrument that took a very long time to set up, and so a lot of time was wasted. One day I said to my supervising engineer, I said, how does one get a new instrument so that I can do my job more efficiently? And he sort of jokingly said, well, you won't get one unless the truck runs over it. And as fate would have, about 2 weeks later, I was on top of Burringbar Range, and that road was so narrow there that I actually had to set up over the drain with one of these theodolite legs against the batter. And lo and behold, two semi-trailers went past quite fast. The first one blew it off its legs and into the path of the second one, which instantly demolished it. You can visualize the problems I had convincing my supervising engineer that it wasn't deliberate, but the truck did run over it, and I did get about a 1920 vintage one then.
The Warringah Expressway was to become the DMR's greatest challenge.
It was the biggest thing since the Noah's Ark at the time. There was something like 47,000 cubic metres of concrete went into that particular contract, and until late in the 1980s on a section of the F3 freeway up towards Newcastle, it remained the biggest single concrete paving contract in roads in this country.
We had a contractor, Reed and Stewart, Reed being the Reed and Malik portion of a UK company, and Stewart Brothers were the people who were partners in building Glazeville Bridge. And they had some very good engineers, English engineers, on the job, and we had a pretty good amicable relationship. I mean, we would only sort of spill blood once a week. The design was actually done by DeLure Cather, which is an American firm, and it was actually done in America, and even the presentation of the design was totally different than we'd been used to in the DMR. So even that took a while to try to visualize what the road would eventually look like. And there were so many split levels and so many ramps and the four main carriageways, and especially at Falcon Street, where on the southern parapet of Falcon Street Bridge, there are 23 traffic lanes, excluding shoulders, side by side. There are 23. And to visualize what it might look like when it was completed was a challenge in itself. The design was done from aerial photography, which those days wasn't quite as accurate as it is now. And the 2.4 kilometres of Warringah Expressway joins onto existing surface streets at 33 locations. Now, it's something like 32 that we had to redesign for level or slight adjustment of line, because when we came to connect, they didn't quite match the plans. But that would be expected, and that was no big hassle. I think it's a pretty good design. It was a new venture for everybody, because nothing of that scale on the roads had been undertaken in Sydney. Something like 404 houses were actually demolished, and some 100-odd were adjusted, and There was also the North Sydney red light area, the Little Arthur Street, that actually got obliterated. And the ladies even came with a deputation to me at one stage to relocate them, but I told them I was in a different business. I think it would be impossible to build something like that in such a densely populated area this day and age. It just would not be a goer for, be they environmental or any other reason.
Can you tell me something about the specifications of building this expressway?
The pavement was somewhat unique. We hadn't built something like this before. It was designed before the time when we knew about equivalent standard axles and mechanistic designs and things like that. So it's not clear what the parameters were. But basically, the pavement consisted of 300 millimeters of a select subgrade zone, which was a sort of good quality sandstone with a plasticity index less than 12 and maximum size rock less than 100 and things like that. Then it had 150 millimeters of dense graded gravel as the base course and 200 millimeters of reinforced concrete. Now, this reinforced concrete was actually reinforced with fabric and obviously a lot smaller proportion of steel than is currently we put into CRCP. But this fabric was continuous.
Avo, there have been a number of firsts on the Warringah Expressway job. Can you tell me some of them?
First of all, concrete pavements without expansion joints. We developed some special treatments for concrete slabs where the sides are quite acute angled so that they won't break off. The use of subsoil drains in cuttings, regardless whether water was there or not, was first. The deliberately designed contraction joints that were guillotined into the pavement, and they varied in spacing between 6.2 and 7.5 meters, so as not to start the harmonic when the wheel goes over it. We used tied-on curbs, for instance, and the gutters were actually formed as part of the concrete base. I'm sure we were the first to use aliphatic alcohols as a evaporation inhibitor to stop setting and shrinkage cracks. We used bitumen emulsion as a curing compound where the concrete was to be overlaid with asphalt. The hot joints in the asphalt were three pavers in echelon, and maybe even the textured colored concrete in the median, which in wet weather is very distinct and doesn't give a sort of reflective response. The use of steel forms and the purpose-built paving train, first in Australia. It was literally a paving train that ran on rails, and the rails were actually the side forms for the concrete. It placed only one lane, or 3.7 meters at the time, and it consisted of a number of units. The first unit was a trade name ABG paver that placed the first 100 millimeters, and then there was a platform that followed on that the steel reinforcing mesh was pulled off, and then finally it was actually the Rex paver that placed the remainder of the concrete and finished it. In the case of Warringah Expressway, it was mandatory to have the asphalt overlay on it. So the skid resistance and smoothness is really in that last 50 millimeters of asphalt that was put on. That asphalt is now 33 years old, and this is unbelievable anywhere in the world. Normally, we estimate that asphalt needs replacement at the best every 12 years, and this is then with a good quality polymer modified bitumen. And normally, this happens even more frequently. Now, to have that asphalt there 33 years is just unbelievable.
Now, what was learned from the Warringah Expressway experience that benefited the DMR and any future jobs that they did after that? What sort of things do you think they might have picked up from there?
I think the fact is that good jobs and good work could be done by contractors rather than just, which we used, kept thinking that we were the only ones who could do it. I think that was the major one.
Has there been anything built in the Sydney urban area that is on the same scale as the Warringah Expressway?
Well, certainly not in the complexity. I mean, we've now built a number of freeways, but compared to the complexity of Warringah, there has been no need either. So I can't recall anything that would match it.